Hi, welcome to Wandering Into the Woods, a podcast brought to you by the creators of Adventures with BG. I'm Linda.
And this is Jarrett.
And today we are going to be talking about the Lone Star Hiking Trail out in East Texas. According to the USDA's Forest Service, the Lone Star Hiking Trail is 129 miles out in East Texas, and it basically covers Sam Houston National Forest. And it passes through the eastern edge of the forest near Montague Church on FM 1725, close to Cleveland, Texas. It is to the extreme western edge of Richards, Texas. You can see sections of the trail cross private property and public road rights of way. So visitors should show good trail manners. It's relatively flat because it's Texas, so I'll stop reading now. But if anybody has been out here in eastern Texas, you know that it's basically a lot of forest areas, very humid, very flat.
I'm going to have to stop you so what? We can issue a correction already. So it's actually 96 and a half or so miles.
No, Jarrett, the USDA's website says it's 129.
I know, but they're wrong. So that's if you were to do some loops with some other ones and to do some crossover trails, but the actual Lone Star Trail is only 96 and a half. You can make it longer because there's other trails out there, but it's actually only 96 and a half.
So breaking news, also controversial, Jared says that the Lone Star Hiking Trail is only 95 miles long.
96 and a half.
Sorry, 96 and a half.
Yeah.
So you listeners take that to, you know, to heart. That's probably the best advice you'll get out there as far as how the length of this length of this trail. So Jared here had the audacity to go and hike this trail out in Texas at the end of September 2021. Mm-hmm. And now he's going to tell us about his adventure. He decided his goal was to try to do 100 miles within the span of 5 days.
Yep.
Jared, how did that go?
It happened. So that was a thing.
So you did complete the 96.5 miles?
96.5 is probably a little bit closer with detours and stuff. But yeah, 96 and a half.
And at about how many miles a day were you covering?
20.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was
No, but because you finished early on the last day.
Uh-huh.
Really early.
Okay.
So maybe you were doing a little bit more the first 4 days?
No. The average is probably 20.
Okay, so how did you cover so fast the last day?
I just walked quicker.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So, I mean, there's slightly less miles to do because, you know, 16 miles instead of 20 because math.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
A big accomplishment.
Yeah.
It doesn't just happen within the span of 5 days, so there's a lot of preparation that went into effect.
Yeah, there's a little bit.
So, please tell me, what did you pack for this trip?
Tent, sleeping pad, sleeping bag, a little bit of medicine, first aid kit, gear repair, headlamp, charger, and then, you know, 5 days of food and water and a water filter.
So, about how much do you think your backpack weighed?
Total weight, less 30 pounds or less, food being one of the biggest, food and water being the, you know, obviously the two biggest weights.
Did you do any water caching or did you just rely on the water that you packed initially?
I relied on the water I packed and, you know, being able to filter water.
And you had a one of those mobile filters with you?
Yeah, okay. A Sawyer.
Okay.
That's the way to go.
Awesome. And is this trail like a loop or is it start one long line? So how did you prepare for the end of it?
So you've got to coordinate transportation either with someone you know or you drive out there and they pick you up and take you back to your car.
Who's they?
Your friends.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I think I said that earlier.
Okay.
You got to coordinate with your friends. Yeah. So you got to coordinate with friends, family to pick you up and take you out there. That's one option. I saw on Facebook some people use Lyft or Uber. I guess Lyft allows you to call and make an appointment, but I saw that was pretty spotty. But looking through the groups, I found someone named Charlotte. So if you want to hike this trail, I can refer you to her. But she met me at Trailhead 15, which is the end, and drove me all the way to the start. And then I went on my way that way. So I left my car.
How long was that trip in the car?
50 minutes, an hour.
Okay.
Yeah.
Shout out to Charlotte.
Yeah, definitely. And so if, you know, if you want, need someone who can do it, she's usually around. So let me know and I can, you know, I guess get you in contact now that I know her.
Was it for a fee?
Yeah, she says she takes whatever. So you just kind of pay her what you feel is worth it. When I looked, you know, most of the stuff is related to the Appalachian Trail.
Mm-hmm.
They recommend $1 an hour, $1 a mile.
Okay.
So that seems to be a reasonable fee, but Charlotte didn't have any specific amount. She said, whatever you give me is fair. So.
Oh, that's really nice of her.
Yeah.
But that doesn't excuse, like, you know, give her what you can give her.
Yeah, definitely.
For sure. And so once you started out, so you actually, I remember you woke up at 3 a.m, but mm-hmm. we're in Austin.
Yep.
So you went out to the end of the trailhead.
Yeah, I drove out three and a half hours, to the trailhead 15 and left my car there. And that's where I met my transportation. And then we drove over to trailhead 1 and that's where I started the trek.
Awesome. And then, so how, tell us about your first day.
I mean, you know, any first day of an adventure, you've got a lot of excitement and you're willing to move fast. The first thing that I noticed is spiders, and they are a recurring theme throughout the entire trek. So be ready for spiders and their spider webs, because they love to make them across the trail on the Lone Star Hiking Trail.
What kind of spiders?
I don't know. There's multiple types. There's small ones, a couple different types, and then there's some big ones, which seem to be a couple of different types. And
I was gonna ask how big. Maybe I don't want to know how big.
Yeah, I mean, from, you know, a quarter of an inch, and some of them are an inch and a half probably.
Oh god.
Yeah.
Yeah, you hear that huffing and puffing in the background. It's BG, but BG's conveying my feelings right now regarding the spiders.
Yeah, so be prepared for spider webs. It's flat, it gets wet, and there's spider webs. So those are the three things that you, I guess, at a broad, you know, need to know about the Lone Star Hiking Trail.
So, Jared, you know, you talked about the spiders and how ferocious they were. Tell us, you know, before you go into your plan, can you give us an idea of the terrain? You know, did it change throughout the entire trip, or was it the same terrain, type of terrain during the 5 days?
No, it's almost the same. It's flat. It's mostly sandy. Occasionally, you get a little bit of black, you know, soil like we're used to here in Central Texas. But yeah, it's mostly flat. The biggest inclines you'll face are going up and down, you know, the creek beds inside of the national forest areas. But that's about it.
A lot of pine trees?
Definitely a lot of pine trees. I mean, there's some other stuff in a couple spots. I mean, so it's broken into 11 sections, and one of them is the magnolia section. So there's, you know, some magnolia trees, but you never get away from the pine. So that's the big thing of this area.
Okay.
And so for my first day, I was looking to accomplish the first three of these 11 sections. So the wilderness section, the Kelly Creek area, and the stubble field. And the stubble field ends at a bridge or a detour. So, I mean, first day, big excitement. You know, you hike fast, you're fresh, so you can put up these big miles pretty easy and not feel it. Kind of getting, you know, feel for the area. Everything's new. It doesn't change really past the first day. There are a couple of things that you see that are different, but for the most part, it's going to be the same type of terrain, same type of vegetation, and tons of spiders. So just be prepared for that. It's miles and it's a good through hike to start with. But, you know, just realize that it's your first through hike if you use it as such, and that there's other stuff out there. You know, Big Bend's different. If you want to do one of the Triple Crown, you know, they're different. So it's flat and it's pine trees. And so the day, I mean, not a whole lot happens. I take a picture of, you know, the different bugs, a couple of spiders that I see, some cicada skins where they shed it, some slugs.
Ooh.
Yeah, some mushrooms, because there's some mushrooms growing out there. So, you know, but I'm hiking fast. I make good time.
Did you check if those slugs knew the slugs in my house?
I did. They did. And they're planning a huge attack on your new plants.
Knew it.
Yeah. So, you know, whizzed through the first day. Not a whole lot. Kept my water. Didn't stop to filter at any of the small creeks, but they're there when I went. And so... All my excitingness happened the first night when I camped. So at the very end of the day, at about 20 miles, is actually Stubblefield, which is next to a lake, Lake mm-hmm. Conroe. And it's similar to people from Central Texas, if you know, like Cedar Breaks, all of the Corps of Engineers and federally run campsites around Lake Georgetown. So similar to that, but it's, you know, Lake Conroe's double filled. And there is a bridge there. And it's under construction, so technically you cannot cross it. So that's one of those things that you're going to have to, you know, make a decision on if you want to go around or if you're worried about the $200 fine that they could give you for crossing this bridge. So I made it there around 6 o'clock.
Wait, so there's a bridge you can't cross?
Because it's under construction.
Oh.
That's why. So they don't want you crossing. It was damaged.
Okay.
They've been building it for 3 years or something.
Oh, wow.
It was supposed to be done this summer, but as my transportation host told me, it flooded 3 times, so that really set things back. But there's essentially, you know, a full bridge out there. It just needs to be paved and, like, finalized.
Okay.
Yeah. So you get to Stubblefield. There's actually water there. That's where I got my water.
Mm-hmm.
And I took a break there because there's some benches. If you pay, you can camp there. A lot of people do. I think it's $15 a night. Probably 20 the max. So you can get water if you don't pay. You can use the restroom if you don't pay. But, you know, if you stay there, you've got a real campsite. You've got all the water you want. You're right there next to spigots. You got the restroom right there, and you can take a shower too. So there's some draw for some people. I wasn't really super concerned with the shower, especially the first day, right? So I just, you know, kept going. On the other side of the bridge is a hunter's campground. So it's one of the designated areas. So that's where I stayed my first night.
Mm-hmm.
There was no one on the bridge. So they had the equipment and all the stuff out there, but no one was actually working. So if you go through the day, you've got to make a decision if you want to cross this bridge. The biggest thing at play is probably safety.
Right.
You know, you're getting in the way of construction workers. They had like one piece of construction equipment out there. I'm sure it'd be dangerous if you walk through. But at the nighttime, you know, there's no real safety concern. So I wouldn't think that it's, you know, necessarily morally or ethically wrong to cross it. But legally, it is because they could fine you if they were out there. So that's one of the decisions you've got to make.
And you're not aware of any other hazards that, you know, an engineer or anybody else could point out.
Yeah. So the biggest question is, are you willing to risk a small fine and, you know, deal with that question of legality?
Yeah, we're not going to advise you.
Yeah,
anyway.
So that's a question you've got to make or a decision you've got to make. If not, you've got to take a slight detour to get around Lake Conroe, which is, you know, the West Fork of the San Jacinto River. So you've got to go up and then, you know, take some roads, cut around on another bridge and then come back down. So that's what happens if you decide that you don't want to just walk across the bridge. So for my night, I was at this camp, Hunter's Campground. It's just a big open field, essentially. Cars can drive up to it. It's off a road.
Mm-hmm.
So being a backpacker, someone who's used to being like in the backcountry, somewhat, you know, concealed and hidden, did not like that at all. So I picked the one of the back corners with, you know, a little bit of tree to protect me, because that is one of my fears, that someone will just kind of drive in not paying attention and run me over in my tent.
Right.
So I, you know, put a couple of trees in front of me, picked the back corner that was most hidden, made my dinner, you know, which is just, you know, reconstituting some sort of, you know, meal. So boiled my water, added the meal to it. You know, it takes 10 minutes before it's ready. Set up my camp, you know, which was my tent, sleeping bag, sleeping pad. By then, it's getting dark. It's probably close to 8. You know, I eat and just go straight to sleep. The first night was pretty interesting.
How so?
One of the first things to happen around 11 o'clock, a car shows up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fairly certain they didn't see me, but it, you know, startled the crap out of me. And then we got into this weird situation where I'm like, it's too late for them to notice me because I could scare them and I don't really want to get shot or get into anything out there. So I've got to just, you know, not draw any attention to myself, which I'm in a tent. So it's not like they can see me moving around or anything anyways, but specifically not making a lot of noise or shining a light.
So it was just some campers out there?
Or? Not campers, just guys who I think wanted to drink and mm-hmm. just a spot to drive to. And, you know, get away from it all.
Okay.
And they had some music on occasionally. I don't know if they ever saw me, but around midnight is when they decided to leave.
Mm-hmm.
There was an extra beer can, like, close to where I was. And I don't know if it was there when I went to bed or not.
Okay.
So they might have dropped it and seen me and decided to leave. Or it may have just been like, we've been here for like an hour. Let's leave.
Yeah.
So they finally left and I could
it
be
was
less...
a weeknight, wasn't it? It was like a Tuesday night.
It was
night.
Tuesday,
yeah.
So it was weird that anyone was out there. I was afraid it might happen, but I picked a good spot so they didn't see me. They literally might have seen me when they were pulling out because they pulled out, you know, car lights hit me as they did like a loop out of this thing. But that may have been the first time, or they may have seen me like walking around and that's why they decided to leave. I don't know. Ended peacefully, thankfully. The next thing that happened was my camping pillow popped. Just the valve blew out, so I didn't really have any, you know, amazing neck support or head support for the rest of my night. Yeah.
That sucks.
Had it for years, so that was a big disappointment. And then after that, big storms blew in, so there's a lot of thunder and lightning, a little bit of rain.
So you didn't get much sleep that night?
I slept fine.
Okay.
Other than that 1 hour, you know, that they were there and I was trying not to, you know, stir or cause any issues. But yeah, so big storms blew in. Got the outside of my tent wet, and that, you know, caused issues with just packing it up. It's never good to pack up your stuff wet and hike the next day because everything else will get wet next to it. But yeah, there's no wind out there is another thing I noticed. Like, there's hardly any wind, which I guess is a good thing because branches and trees just fall over randomly.
Oh, interesting.
And so that was a thing that I heard frequently on my hikes. Was just a large tree falling over, you know, fairly near, or a large branch falling down. So when you do set up your campsite, make sure that you're looking up above you to see dead trees, dead branches, because they'll get you.
Okay.
Yep. So I woke up the next day and started. So for day two, I wanted to finish up the Stubblefield section, the Huntsville, and end on the Phelps section. That's where I ended up camping. Woke up. I had the intention of making a hot breakfast, but every day I just ended up eating my trail mix instead for breakfast.
Oh, wow.
And then rolling out, you know, all my outside stuff was wet, as far as my tent, but everything else, you know, that I put inside was fine. So my tent was wet when I put it away, unfortunately. And then I started out, you know, got back into the trail. By that point I needed more water. I didn't want to recross over the bridge or walk all the way around because I assumed workers were out there on the way. So I didn't want to go back to Stubblefield Park and get water. So the next creek I found, I had to stop. So walking, stopped at a footbridge. The water there is, I don't know if it's tannins or just from the pine tree, but there's a lot of particulate in there. Dark, you know, it's a sand maybe. So it's hard on the filters. So it was taking me a while to filter water at this first stream that I found. I'm almost done, thankfully, and I just hear what sounds like a stampede coming towards me down the trail.
Ooh.
And so I look up, and there is, at a minimum, 7 dogs, maybe 10 or more.
Oh, wow.
They're just running down. They don't look in terrible shape, but they don't have collars on. So I'm like, oh, man, wild dog pack. I'm about to get it.
Were they friends of BG?
No, they were not friends.
Uh-oh.
Most of them took off. The smallest one and the one in front.
No, you're serious. It was a wild dog pack?
I don't think it was. I think it was someone owned them, but I'm not for certain. I mean, they looked in decent shape, so okay. I think that someone owned them.
Okay.
But, I mean, pretty adjacent to a wild dog pack, apparently.
Like, they're used collars. To having, yeah, they're
yeah.
running around and being happy dogs.
It was definitely their creek, and they were not excited that I was in it.
Yeah. Is that when you sent me a picture of your friend?
No, that was later.
Okay.
So yeah, the one just stands there and barks at me. It gets a couple of other ones to be more brave because of that. And
it
so,
was the leader?
No, it was the smallest. So it definitely wasn't the leader.
Did it think it was the leader?
I just thought it was bigger than it was, I think. But, so, you know, I'm just like, get out of here, y'all. And, you know, keep an eye on him and back away slowly as I finish up, you know, hop out of this 3-foot creek bed back onto this footbridge. And back away slowly. And they gave me the business, you know, till I was at least 100 feet away. And they felt safe enough, I guess, to go down in that creek. And that was the end of that. But
they're like, get on, get.
Yeah. You know, a little nerve-wracking at first because
they're wild dogs and they outnumber you by far.
Yeah. And so, but I guess, you know, they were owned and they just wanted their creek. So once I was out of the way, they were completely cool with, you know, leaving me be. And then, so just more of that, small creeks, most of them had a little bit of water, I guess, or were dry, a few foot bridges. About halfway through the day, you reach Camille Lake, and you have to walk over a dam, but it's an overflow dam, so a little bit of water runs over the top and kind of a spillway, and it's super slick. Okay. It's not recommended. It seems like a whole lot of water around this fancy housing development, but I guess it's of poor quality with pesticides, herbicides, you know, fertilizers, things like that. So don't drink from it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so you've got to cross over this slick, small dam. So that was, you know, a whole thing that you've got to work through. It's intimidating as you come up to it. But as I crossed it, the water was half an inch at most, just very slick. So less intimidating once you get there, but it's a thing that you've got to worry about. And then moving on, you'll eventually come to road. So this is like going to be one of your first sections of road walking.
How long is it going to be?
It's a few miles, and this is also the Huntsville section. So when you're there, you you're pretty close to I-45.
So it's literally you walking along the edge of a highway.
I mean, the feeder roads, but yes.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
So and the ones there, are they still two ways?
This one was.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's two way feeder road. There wasn't really one on the feeder road itself, so that wasn't much of a worry.
Okay.
It's when you get onto the Texas Park Road or Park Road 40 that there's actually some traffic. A little bit, not too much.
Mm-hmm.
But in this section, you can actually take it to Huntsville State Park. I did not do that, but you know, it's another designated campsite. They have a store sometimes, or they used to in the past. I'm not sure, but they do have vending machines. They do have showers, restrooms, all the water you want. So it'll add another 2 to 2.5 miles each way if you do decide to stay there. So it'll lengthen your trip a little bit.
But might be worth it.
Could be worth it if you're into, you know, having potable water ready at your disposable and you need a shower and that kind of stuff.
It is rather nice.
Yeah. So those things. But yeah, so the Huntsville section is essentially to a couple of miles of walking on I-45 feeder road and then Park Road 40 and US 75. After a little bit, you'll eventually get back to the woods, and that'll be the start of the Phelps section.
What is the Phelps section?
It's just kind of this weird section out on its own. It's not very big. It's off of Evelyn Road.
No relation to Michael Phelps?
I don't think so. Yeah, it'll be off of Evelyn Road. You cut in for a while, then you cut back onto Evelyn Road, and then you continue on. So the first section where I ended, which is about 38 miles to 38 and a third, is at the designated primitive camp Phelps.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I stopped for my night. So a little bit less than 20 miles, 18.3.
Okay.
Someone had left a camp chair out there, so I was super grateful for that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, these designated campsites usually have one small, like, boxed off sand area that drains well for a tent, and that's it. So thankfully, I didn't see anyone else hiking this or camping. I saw a couple of people, two guys walking on the I-45 feeder road in as I was coming out, like right at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
And that was about the extent of the people I saw, other than in cars and at the very end on the last day.
Okay.
Yeah.
It is early fall in Texas, so I'm sure it might get more busy as the fall continues.
And I assume the weekend there's probably more people out there too. True. Maybe. But yeah, so didn't see a whole lot of people. No one was there at this campsite. Had a chair. Went through my same plan. You know, make my food, set up my tent while it's getting ready, eat my food, go to bed. This night, thankfully, it was dry. So everything dried out, which was nice. You know, I had my tent dry again, got everything dried out in my bag that had touched it. So, you know, overall, really good night. As far as backpacking goes, good night of sleep.
Nature was like, yes, Jared, get comfortable.
Yeah. Oh, and I forgot, as you said earlier, when I hit the Phelps section and got on the trail, some dogs barked at me across the road. And I'm like, oh, no. And then I saw a white blur bark at me.
Uh-huh.
And come running towards me. And I'm like, oh, no, I better get moving. And so I'm like hustling, walking as fast as I can, making sure that no dogs like come attack me.
Uh-huh.
But this dog, a friend of the hiker, just silently ran up on me. And I'm like, turn around. And, you know, the dog's right there. So, you know, I pet him.
Oh.
And
Angela knows you cheated on them.
I mean, it's his forest. I don't have a choice. You have to pay tribute.
Uh-huh.
And I would pet him, and he would just run up the trail, do dog stuff, sniff, you know, mark, whatever, and then come running back and sit between my legs and get some more pets.
Aww.
He did that for a while, and I'm like, hey, man, you're getting pretty far from your house. You probably ought to go home.
Uh-huh.
And he apparently understood that. I don't know if it was just like, this is as far as I go, or if he understand me, tell him to go home, but, you know, he did.
Nice. Okay. Yeah.
And then so I continued on by myself. Uh-huh. And that's where I, you know, ended up making camp and everything, so...
Nice.
Yep. And so that was it for the second day. So for day three sections, it was finishing Phelps, Four Notch, and then moving into Big Woods. And then to start my day, same thing as always, didn't end up cooking, just wanted to get started. So I ate my trail mix, headed out. You finish up about another mile of this section, then you hit Evelyn Road again,
mm-hmm.
and then you're back into the woods. And then after that, you know, you get through 2.5 miles of the woods, and then you've got about 2.5 miles of road walk.
Okay.
So mostly smaller roads, but you know, be prepared to walk quite a bit. If you have better luck, I guess you could hitchhike if you wanted. You know, it would definitely save you some time.
At your own risk.
Yeah, and you wouldn't miss anything as far as like, there's nothing special about the roads. One thing I did notice is people don't care that you exist on them. Like, most of the roads have like...
What about Texas friendliness, Jay?
Yeah, I know. Like most of the time you have like a 6-inch shoulder. Since it was kind of wet, you know, or uneven ground, like real steep, like that's where I was at. Always walk on the left side. So, you know, into oncoming traffic. But yeah, a lot of times they wouldn't move over. They're like, nope, don't care. Like,
wow.
You're in this lane. Like, I'm not going to budge. Like, I'll move over as much as I can, but we're going to be pretty close. So
wow.
It's kind of a weird thing. Like personally, you know, when I see a biker or someone walking on the road, I give them a wide berth, but out there or maybe everywhere did not seem to care.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and then after the road walk, you know, you're back into the woods. This is one of those days that it had been dry the night before. So I really noticed me being upset with the spider webs. I think they really slowed me down. Especially since I needed to walk 22 miles today instead of just a flat 20.
Oh, wow.
And so I was running into them. Sometimes they were triple stack spider webs, but every 20 to 30 seconds, like you could easily find one. And so it slowed me down. I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't enjoy spider webs sticking to my face.
No.
And having facial hair.
No. You know,
it'll attach to me, like my stubble a lot better, I assume, than a smooth face.
I am feeling everything you're describing. I am not a fan.
So, you know, that was a pain and really slowed me down, especially since, you know, I was feeling, you know, kind of tired and stuff.
Right.
My feet, like you get into this grass area towards the end of the day. Well, I guess backing up, the only time I saw wind was towards, you know, middle of the afternoon, later afternoon. A little bit of rain blew in,
mm-hmm.
and there was actually some wind. It was actually kind of scary. As I had mentioned before, trees falling over and branches.
Right.
So like those things were just happening without the wind. So like seeing things blow there in the wind was, you know, kind of scary. I'm like, oh man, is a tree or a branch going to come down on me?
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully none did. It was short lived, at least for the moment. So but because of that, occasionally you'll get to areas where the pine trees, you know, have been killed by fire.
Oh.
So a lot of under brush and like grasses and shrubs and things grow in.
Yeah.
So they line the trail. So you got to kick through them.
Okay.
Like grasses. So they hold water. They make it harder. And so that was one of the things I experienced on the third day, was getting wet. So this was like one of the first times I think my feet started to get wet.
Okay.
And I don't really get blisters unless my feet get wet. Then I will get wrinkle foot blisters, as I call them. So that was one of the things, you know, I started developing on day three.
Charming. Yeah.
So I blame it on the spider webs. I move much slower. So this was the first night that I actually had to pull out my headlamp and do a little hiking in the dark.
Blame it on the poor, innocent spiders who are just working day after day.
Yeah. I saw a bunch of empty nests, so they couldn't have been working that hard.
They were trying to webs, hunt I guess mosquitoes.
They had. They were not. I didn't see any mosquitoes.
They were out feeding their babies.
I would have been less salty about it had I actually seen nests or webs full of mosquitoes.
Okay.
But so I hike. At the end of the day, there is a pond. So in times when it's dry, it's one of the only areas that's really available between, you know, 50 to 70 that you can get water. ended up not being the case for me. I didn't need to worry about it. But you can hit this pond up. And then right after that, there is the primitive camp I stayed in, which is called Designated Primitive Camp FS202D. And it's just...
What a creative name.
Yeah, it's Forest Service is the FS. Mm. So it's just like where this Forest Service road ends.
Right.
Just to the right, off the side of it is like a campsite. So similar, like a slightly cleared area, fire ring, and another raised like little tent pad area. So same thing, same plan as all the other nights, you know, cook my food over by the fire ring, set up my tent, and then go to bed. Except for this night, I mean, the storms really just blow in.
Mm-hmm.
So there's quite a bit of rain starting early. Okay. And it goes all night. So thunderstorms, rain all night. I wake up in the morning. It is still raining. I'm slower to get out, just waiting for it to have less rain because, you know, once I take my tent down, there's nothing protecting all of my gear. And there will be this gap when I have to get my gear and my tent and my backpack
right.
to protect it from the rain. But it's sitting out in the rain with nothing really protecting it.
Oh, wow. So what did you do?
Yeah, you just got to move quick. And so that's why I was probably up. I wasn't awake later, but I was, you know, not out of my tent until later in the day, hoping for a little bit of
a break.
Yeah, a break in the rain.
And did it come?
It slowed down enough, but I mean, everything, you know, my tent was soaked and everything was just, you know, a little bit wet. But by the end of the day, like everything from all the rain, spoiler, the rain didn't stop that day and it rained very hard, almost the majority of it.
So the pro of this is you might now be ready to hike in Oregon or Washington.
I don't know, maybe. Yeah, it's a big rain day. So for day four, you finish up the Big Woods section, you move into Magnolia, and you get to the Big Creek area. And so those are the three sections of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So to start, the end of Big Woods is 5 miles of road walking. It's going to be the largest amount of road walking that you'll do. If you're luckier than I am, you can hitchhike it. No one seemed interested. It probably was because it had rained nonstop.
So you really tried to hitchhike?
I mean, I had a thumb up a little bit. I was half-heartedly attempting as I was walking.
I'm shaking my head at Jared at the moment. I'm disappointed.
I mean, but it was super wet. It was not fun.
I understand, but also I don't think hitchhiking is the safest thing to do.
Probably not, but you know, sometimes. But no one was interested, so you get your wish. And I assume either they were like, whatever, but also I was super wet.
We live in the 2020s. We know hitchhiking is not safe, either to pick them up or to be hitchhiking.
No, it's actually a huge part of thru-hiking culture. And like towns around them, it's super acceptable.
Oh, God.
But anyways, no one was interested, I assume, because I was super wet and it was raining nonstop. So about halfway through, you can stop at a church. The Evelyn Baptist Church, not the Cowboy Church, Evelyn Baptist Church. They'll be like catacornered from each other. And they can allow you to use their back spigot to get some water. So,
that's really nice of them.
Yeah. So, I mean, before I realized how wet it was going to be, I was going to stop there and do great things, get a lot of water, maybe even cook a breakfast for the first time. But, you know, it was raining so hard, so I mostly got water, took off my socks in the feeble attempt, hoping that my feet would get somewhat drier.
Uh-huh.
It didn't happen. It was just, you know, wet, humid, and was never going to get dry in that temperature and climate. So I just sat, you know, for a little while under an awning to not be wet and be rained on for a while. And then, you know, you just got to start back down your road hiking until you can get back into the woods.
Neat.
Also, I forgot to mention by this point, the charging cable that I had brought had somehow died in all this water. So I was not able to charge my phone the night before. So I was, you know, on these roads. And so on the trail, it's super easy. Like there's trail markers, so you know where you're going, mile markers. But on the roads, you know, you're kind of winging it. So it's not like I could refer to my phone to be like, oh, how much further I have to go, because I was saving that battery. So that was one of the things I was dealing with on this big road walk of a section. But finally making it in, you know, to the woods, you start the magnolia section where you actually see some magnolia trees, which are kind of, you know, I think weird. My grandma had one in her front yard, so I know what they are. But it's not really what I think of in the area. You know, I think of pine trees, some oaks, and maybe some cypress and stuff. So it was neat seeing those. And, you know, once you get in there, there's quite a few creeks, you know, that feed into the East Fork of the San Jacinto. So there's a lot more water than there normally be because of the rain. And about, about a mile away from where you're supposed to cross the East Fork of the San Jacinto, there's no bridge there anymore. It's been washed out. So if it's been raining, you know, do the detour. So I get about a mile in and I cross over this creek that has a footbridge, but the water level is up covering the very start of it and only part of it is out of the water. You know, it's got like an inch and a half of water over it. So I'm like, all right, I already know that I'm crossing the San Jacinto is going to be, you know, a tough thing. So I'm going to just backtrack, use a little bit of my phone battery to turn on and see the San Jacinto detour. So I hike back. It ends up taking you on a Forest Service road out to a road that you were on earlier. You walk down, you cross a large creek and the San Jacinto themselves. They're both full of water. I'm glad I made that decision early because, you know, it would have been a swim. So swimming them, I could have done. It wouldn't have been a thing. I'm a fairly, you know, proficient swimmer. I think I can make it across before like a strainer or something got me. The big issue is, you know, you have a backpack full of stuff that you don't want to get wet to get sunken with water and super heavy or to just disappear off your body. So, you know, be aware of that. If you've got all this extra stuff, you don't want to lose it. So take the detour. It's a little confusing. It takes you on a fire road. You cross a smaller creek. There's like a half busted bridge that you can kind of shimmy over while in the, you know, waist deep water. And then you, thankfully, some people have kind of marked this. So you've got a break brush. There's a little bit of a trail, but they've got some markers out there that'll help you find your way. You get back on some Forest Service roads and they end you back up on the Lone Star Trail about a mile and a half down past the San Jacinto. So I detoured, probably added a few miles onto my trek, but you know, I didn't get washed away by a river and I was able to continue, you know, forcing my way through some, you know, flooded creeks. And then towards the end of the day, you make it to another one of these, you know, designated campgrounds. So showers, bathrooms, things like that. I get there. I walk across the dam looking to see if there's maybe like anywhere to stay because I'm like, I'm pretty beat at this point and wet. Like I'm ready to just camp. It looks like everything's reserved. The first restroom I went to across the dam was closed. So I probably added a mile on to not gain anything. Come back, found a restroom opened on the side where the trail was. Go in there. I try and dry out, you know, my phone and charger to see if I can get it working again. It's not going. Try and dry my socks and shoes a little bit with a blow dryer. So that helps some. And then realizing I couldn't camp and I needed to continue on and get to my campsite at mile 83. I pulled out, you know, my water bladder. And as I was pulling it out, it stabbed a hole in something as I was pulling it out. So I just ruined that thing. And had no more water bladder. I was left to my smart water bottle, which was 22 ounces, and my Sawyer squeeze bag at 16 ounces. So I was carrying about 40 ounces of water, you know, filled it up with fresh water and went on. So realizing this was going to be a, you know, big night going 83, which would have put me, you know, 23 and a half miles for the day, plus all the detours and walking across the dam. So quite a few extra miles. Knew it was going to be a night hike. So around mile 80 or so, it gets dark as I enter the Tarkington Bayou section. So, right before you get to the designated camp area, there's actually a trail to Hunter's Camp. I took that for about a quarter of a mile and I'm like, this doesn't seem right. Went back to the main trail and then found the campsite that I actually wanted. This night, this campsite is much smaller. It's not as great as the other ones. There's no like little raised area. It's just a bunch of grass and you just set up wherever. So I set up my tent. Everything is soaked. My tent smells terrible. My bag smells terrible. All my stuff smells terrible. You know, everything I own is wet at this point. And, you know, just make the best of it I can. You know, best of I can of the night. Get some food in me and go to sleep in a slightly moist sleeping bag. So day 5 and the last day. You cover 2 sections. You finish out the Tarkington section and then Winter's Bayou. For that morning, woke up, didn't cook anything.
So you ended up not cooking any of the mornings?
I didn't cook any of the mornings. It wasn't worth the effort. I just ate my trail mix and went about my day.
Okay.
So, you know, things were still incredibly wet from the night. It rained a little bit, but it was just so humid out there. Nothing dried out. So wet socks, wet clothes, put them all on.
Ugh, miserable.
Yeah, packed up all my wet gear, put on my wet shoes, started out. Early on, one of the notable things that happened, I was walking, got in a spider web. It happens. You just kind of get used to it.
Spiders.
You know, felt something kind of brush my hair, swiped the back of, you know, my head to get the...
Oh, God.
To get the spider web and whatever off. Hear a skitter.
No.
It was a fairly larger spider. Instantly, I knew because I could actually hear it skitter. So, quickly noped out of that situation and took my pack off. As I threw it down, you know, I saw a 1-inch spider, 1.5-inch spider.
I'm not enjoying listening to this.
He also, or she, did not like the situation and was scurrying down the side of my pack.
But you heard it.
Yeah.
Oh.
And so, they jumped off my pack when I put it down, hit the ground and played dead, you know, hoping to stay safe and not get crushed. So we were both scared in that situation.
Wow.
Neither one of us enjoyed it.
Wow.
So that was one of the most notable, you know, kind of freaked me out a little bit. You know, normally the big spiders wiggled at you and they make more intricate webs so you see them so you can avoid them or knock them down. It's the little spiders that get on you more frequently.
I'm not okay with any of them.
Yeah, thankfully, none of them are particularly venomous to humans. So it's not like they're black widows or brown recluses. They're probably out there. They're just not the ones building webs in the middle of the trail. So then you go on for a while. It's more of the same. You start out in some of the, like I was talking about, the burned out sections where undergrowth is taken up.
Right.
So it's kind of exhausting kicking through quite a bit of grass, but if I wasn't wet enough already, I was wet again because the grass was just transferring all the morning dew and onto my pants, shoes, and socks. So I got to live that.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, super. So then, you know, you get down, at the very end, I guess it's known more as the muddy section, but before that, you know, you start getting close to the San Jacinto again, and there are, you know, a couple of creeks, a little more water in this area, nothing like it was, on the day that it was raining. But you know, you get close to the San Jacinto, there's a couple of, you know, full creeks running into it and you're like, oh, okay, we take some footbridges over them. And then you see this wide creek, probably 20 feet across because it's swollen from all the rain, and it's the actual San Jacinto. And you see that there's a bridge across it, but there is a section that you have to wade across before you can actually get to the bridge. It was weird. So the river itself kind of makes a triangle around this island where the bridge is. And so I guess normally there's not enough water to flow in that section, or it's very shallow. But because it had been raining a lot, there was, you know, quite a bit of water there.
Oh, wow.
So I had to actually wade across a portion of the San Jacinto. And so it makes like a triangle with this island.
So you were wading, not waddling?
No, it was wading. I mean, it being a full-blown river, I went and found at least armpit-length sticks. Because the more points of contact for rushing water, the better.
Okay.
You know, I wanted as much stability as possible. I didn't know how strong or deep the water was.
Right.
Also, undid all of the straps on my bag, attaching it to myself. That way, if it got stuck, we could get separated and it wouldn't drown me.
Nice.
And I guess before that, I actually looked for a couple of logs to see if I could, you know, just shimmy across the San Jacinto without getting into the water. That was not an option. So I start going. The upstream side of me, I stuck my stick in a couple of times, and it was, you know, deeper than the stick was. But on the downstream side, thankfully, it only got up to about knee deep.
Oh, wow.
So within, you know, a couple of inches of each other, there was, you know, knee deep versus super deep.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I don't know what it looked like down also under the water.
It does not sound comfortable at all.
So, but I was able to use my sticks and wade out across, not get washed away. Made it across that little shallow section of the San Jacinto, went up on the bridge. It's kind of arched. The wood was super slick.
Yeah.
So at the very end, I slipped and tightened up, and then my lower back.
Okay.
Was I like, oh, you rang?
Oh, my God.
So it didn't hurt, but, you know, it let me know that it was upset about the situation for the last, I don't know how many miles it is, 10 or so?
Uh-huh.
Well, it's actually like 4 miles. So you continue on. Then you get down into the muddy section. So it's, you know, 3-ish miles of a little bit of mud and water. It wasn't too terrible. I thought it was going to be like North Carolina coast kind of mud where you sink in, you know, a foot or two.
Eek.
And just slog through it. But no, it was just, you know, a little bit of water and a little bit of mud. So it wasn't too bad. And this area looks more like Palmetto State Park.
Mm-hmm.
So more like a swamp with palmettos or ferns and stuff. So kind of a different feel the last 2 to 3 miles.
Okay.
And then at the very end, you come up to another wide river, and I was like,
again, another one?
Yeah, I'm like, oh, man, am I going to have to cross the San Jacinto again?
Uh-huh.
It's like one of the only times I probably spoke out loud in a while, and that's like the first group of people I saw that day.
Of course.
Yeah, some people doing bird stuff, and they kind of looked at me. But you go up over this iron bridge, similar to the one when you crossed over the San Jacinto. There's no wading, so it was super easy.
Okay.
And then after that bridge, I saw a shirtless guy and what appeared to
doing what?
Getting ready to hike. He was like strapping on his like ultra runner pack, but he was in like a kilt dress thing. It's weird. I don't know.
That's not even comfortable.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know why.
I wonder if he had a thigh gap.
What?
Yeah. Cause if he's in a kilt running,
he wasn't doing any running when I saw him, and it was more like a dress. It went down to his ankles. It was a weird outfit.
I'm just saying, like, as far as running goes, unless you have a thigh gap, you really need, like, some leggings or some tight shorts or something.
I guess. But anyways, and then after that, you know, you're back to the car where I got my water. I didn't stop for any refills in the morning. I just had my, you know, about 30 ounces in the morning and just went the last 13 miles.
Wow, so hardcore.
Yeah, it was lighter and, you know, ready to be done. So got back and had my water. And that was the trip.
Wow. Wow. What an amazing journey.
Yeah, it was something.
Something a friend asked me was, are you worried about Jarrett being out there by himself? How can you let him go and be hiking by himself? And I did let this friend know that, one, I did try to dissuade you from going by yourself. Mm. I tried seeing if I could convince you to convince friends or a friend to go with you, but we weren't able to find you a buddy to go with you. Then I saw that you weren't giving me a choice and you were going to go.
Yep.
So the compromise we reached and the way you reassured me was you got some sort of was it a satellite phone or what was it?
Yeah, it's the Garmin InReach. It allows you to send messages over, or an SOS message over satellites.
And also, it allows you to send me like a morning, this is starting the day, this is my location.
You get infinite presets when you're on, you know, when you pay for a month. So we had the starting the day and ending the day messages built in, so you knew that I was there or starting. Yeah.
Yeah. So that helped me put my mind at ease. I would check for those messages and just, it, you know, unless I was hearing from you via text, you know, then if I wasn't hearing from you via text, then I would look out for those messages.
Hmm.
Trying to think if there's anything else I'm curious about from this journey that you went through. Did you see a lot of hikers out there?
No. I saw those two guys and the three people at the end, and that was about it.
Okay. Yeah. Do you recommend this? What sort of hiker do you recommend this journey for? And do you recommend that they only do one piece of the trail at a time or the entire trail like you did?
I mean, you can do whatever. I mean, if you want a day hike or section hike, it's definitely something worth doing. If you need to do a shakedown hike because you're going to do one of the long trails, it's definitely a good way to get started for that, to practice getting your miles in for the day. So it's got versatility depending on what you want to do.
Do you have any advice for anybody considering doing this trail?
I mean, you know, just nothing in particular. I mean, just be ready to put miles in, whether you want to walk 10 miles a day or you want to walk 20 plus miles a day. You know, just come with that mindset. And if you're looking for, you know, a guide to help you with it, if you go to the lonestartrail.org, they've got a great hiker's guide.
Mm-hmm.
You won't really need it on the trail, but the two things that it'll be invaluable on is planning on where to get your water, because it has water ratings. And where to go on your road days. So when you've got to walk on the road, that can get confusing on how far you need to go, and it'll definitely be a security blanket for that.
For sure. That sounds like great advice to keep in mind.
Yep.
Well, thank you, Jared, for sharing your journey with us and the details regarding preparation, the trail itself, and, you know, any advice that you had. Really appreciate you sharing your story with us. I appreciate our listeners taking the time to listen to this longer than usual episode. If you'd like to hear more about our adventures or learn more about what we do, you can find us at Adventures with BG on Facebook or Instagram.
And if you like what you hear, go ahead and give us a 5-star on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast. It's going to help us grow our audience and, you know, get more followers.
And as always, stay safe as you wander into the woods.